This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
New Zealand's dairy industry has always done things a little differently. It's a relatively small industry, but one built around farmers who have been willing to innovate, adapt, and find new ways of getting more value from their land and their animals. Today, though, deer farmers are operating in a very different environment. Farm numbers are under pressure, costs continue to rise, and alternative land uses are competing for country. At the same time, the industry is looking towards new markets for venison and velvet, new technology, and a new generation of farmers. There's also the growing issue of wild deer. As feral populations increase once again in parts of the country, the distinction between wild deer and New Zealand's farm deer industry has become increasingly important, particularly when it comes to animal health, product quality, and protecting the reputation of New Zealand venison. So where does the industry go from here? This week on the Weekly Hotwire, I spoke with New Zealand Deer Farmers Association Chair Evan Potter about the challenges facing deer farmers, the opportunities ahead, and why he believes the future of the industry ultimately remains in farmers' hands. Hello, Evan. Thanks for joining me today.
Good to hear from you, Angus.
Evan, for those unfamiliar with the industry structure, what's the difference between DINs and NZDFA, and why is it important that deer farmers have their own representative voice?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. So the DFA is farmer-focused and handles anything that sort of is farmer-facing, while DINS is a industry-wide lens. So DINS deals with processes, transport, policy. Farmers by default, because the producers are half of the industry, I suppose. But the DFA just provides a united grassroots lens over things. And it's the conduit, I guess, of transfer of information. And that's both for issues that farmers might be facing or for innovations that might be able to be used by farmers back down to farmers. So we've got a 17-branch network throughout the country. And when DINS comes to, I guess, the executive for an opinion on something, we're providing a view, not just our own personal view, we're providing a view of the majority of deer farmers. So obviously not all deer farmers, because there'll be multiple opinions, but if someone asks us, what do we think about this, we can go out through our network, find out what the general opinion on that is, and then present that as a united view. So rather than having 100 conversations, you can have DINS or the board can have one conversation.
What are the biggest issues NZDFA is currently advocating for on behalf of deer farmers?
Yeah, I suppose probably like most people in the primary sector, profitability, that inflationary pressure that's still creeping in and is there and creeping in. Unique to us is probably that pest and disease pressure. And then generic again would be compliance and probably, I don't know if it's generic to us, but primary based would be industry sustainability around size and just shrinking numbers. I mean, sheep and beef have been shrinking as well. Just, pressure on those sort of things. So that'd be the main things that we're focused on at the moment.
Yeah, and just on those things, how would you describe the current mood among deer farmers, and what are they most optimistic about right now?
Look, I think most deer farmers are fairly positive, that they're a pretty optimistic type of character, but they're also realistic. So they're definitely realists. The short version is there's lots of options for competitive land use. So not only do we have competing land uses encroaching on our traditional areas, but as producers, we too have choices. So we can switch to other proteins, or we can switch to alternative crops, whether that be trees, carbon, viticulture, horticulture, whatever, depending on your land class, dairying even. So that's why I say realistic. But there's a lot of good things about being a deer farmer, that they are a different species that offers you, I guess, a slightly different twist to your business, to your labour, to your to utilising a certain type of land as well. So there are certain land classes whereby they do outperform just due to either exposure and sheep or different things. So there is a lot to be positive about.
Deer farming has a different cost structure and production profile than many other livestock sectors. From your perspective, how are farmers balancing costs, returns, and profitability? And what gives you confidence about the future?
Yeah, well, you're right. We do have a higher input cost for setup, I guess, and I suppose maintenance as well, within reason. But I guess, like all primary-based industries, we've got to be efficient. So we need to deliver as much as we can out of what we've got. And we also have to respond to those economic drivers that dictate where the profitability is. So I guess a good example of that would have been during COVID, when the white tablecloth outlet for venison collapsed. There was quite a major shift to velvet production, which was the key driver. Venison's definitely responded since then with some good changes to how it's distributed and the channels that it's distributed within. And there's a few good marketing initiatives that are going on there. And so that's probably swung back towards venison to a degree. So in terms of, I suppose, other options, then I guess we have to think about the fact that deer farming does add other attributes to your business other than just profitability. So while that is probably your number one driver, you've also got to think about labour utilisation in terms of mixed species operations, which most deer farmers are, definitely in the North Island and largely in the South as well. You've got that parasite ability to switch species over, cross-species grazing, so integration of multiple species. And then you've also you've got the option of different product to sell. So I guess business resilience and different income streams.
And, of course, from a grazing perspective, they complement cattle quite well, don't they?
They do. They work well in with all species, really. I mean, we run sheep amongst ours. I mean, for pest and disease, that they're good. I mean, like, we have ticks at home here, and sheep are used to mop up the ticks, and then the deer also go through and clean a sheep pasture, take away that sheep worm burden. So if you've got any sort of resistance, they're a great tool in the kit to help plan for dealing with that.
Now, you've touched on pest management, and of course, wild deer and pest management continue to attract public attention. That's, you know, we've seen that the last few weeks. And of course, you know, we've seen the feral deer numbers explode in recent times. How important is it that people understand the difference between New Zealand's farm deer sector and discussions about wild deer populations? And what are the implications when those distinctions become blurred, which I think we're seeing a bit of at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. That wild deer issue is very complex, I guess you'd have to say, probably driven predominantly by land use change, which is through expansion of forestry or carbon farming and increase in biodiversity plantings and that sort of stuff. And it's not going away in a hurry. I guess shortage of money for control on dockland and all sorts of – there's lots of reasons why, and you're right that, to point out that it's quite topical. So, look, the biggest risk, I guess, is compromising of the venison brand or of its profile, because they are chalk and cheese. So a domesticated slice of venison is quite a uniform, reliable type product that a chef can use, has distinct eating characteristics that are very different to wild venison. Wild venison is predominantly determined by what they've been eating, whether they're stressed, all that sort of stuff. So it can be quite a fluctuation in quality, and that's a major risk in terms of eating experience. let alone if we start bringing in potential disease or problems. And then coupled with the wild expansion in the wild deer is you also get the, I guess, the risk for TB transfer because they do move around. None of us can guarantee what a wild deer has eaten. So I suppose that opens up a whole lot of issues, also responsibilities. One responsibility, I suppose, from a farming point of view is that we are aware that it's potentially another income stream, but we're also aware that when you send animals to slaughter, you do need to sign a declaration that is a legal document. So be sure that you tick the right box and be sure that you are declaring what you actually know rather than what you presume, so that it can be utilised differently in the supply chain. And that distinction is made and it goes to the right markets because, I mean, market reputation, if we go and destroy market reputation for, I guess, short-term gain, that would be really detrimental to an industry that's been built over many years of passion and hard work. And the flip side of that is it's easy to say, well, we've got this big resource that we need to jump in and harvest and utilise, and it sort of creates jobs through the plants and it creates jobs like Nourish to Nil and all these other guys that are popping up. You've got the social side where they're putting food into food banks. And all of that's fantastic as long as those supply chain protocols are adhered to and rigorous to prevent any sort of issue occurring during the way that will not only potentially damage the domesticated venison industry, but also potentially harm a human being. So it is complex. Yeah. But I guess we, as a producer, I'd like to think that people won't get hung up on short-term gain at the, expense of an industry.
Now, you were the first deer farmer, I believe, to receive the Gordon Stevenson Trophy. Can you tell us about your journey in environmental stewardship and what it says about the way deer farmers are approaching environmental management today?
Golly, I try and keep that well hidden, but not out of embarrassment, but just I guess.
Well, anyway, I think I guess a lot of people like good deeds to go unnoticed, right? But here we are.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I've always said that I'm not green, and I've been told that maybe I am. So we've settled on a light shade of green.
But I like that.
I guess I also say that pretty much everything that we've done here that was sort of building, I guess, and ending up, as you say, the Gordon Stevenson trophy winner, was what I'd call common sense. So we've got land classes that were better suited to native bush. They were along the edge of a waterway. So by default, riparian planting happened, or riparian retirement planting, all that happened out of, well, to me, common sense. So enabled us to manage the better country well. It took away areas that animals went and hid if they were crook, so, and gave us better control in terms of management. So access ways over watercourses or over through muddy areas being built up with tracks and fencing to take out nasty corners, and then what do you do with a dirty little corner? Well, our line of thinking is you put a tree in it, so you get 20 years down the track and suddenly you've got quite an aesthetically pleasing property. Combined with that, though, the industry's always sort of been at the forefront of that. I mean, I think we're one of the first to put out, if not the first, to put out a sort of environmental code of sort of good practice and ways you should sort of think about things and do things. And most land owners or farmers or producers will always sort of say that if you're not looking after your environment, like your physical environment, then you're only eroding profitability or long-term sustainability. And I mean, in the words of Gordon Stevenson, if you can't do it in 100 years' time, it's probably not sustainable. So we all want to keep soil in place. We don't want it to go onto the neighbour's place or, heaven forbid, downtown. So on a hot day, I like being under a cool tree. I don't think animals are any different. I like a cold drink. Animals like water. So that's why I sort of say all this stuff's pretty common sense. But that coupled with the knowledge that's out there and all the research that was put in by the industry, it sort of goes hand in hand, I guess. And the proof of that would be that we've had three deer industry recipients of the Gordon Stevenson Trophy, since, like me being the first, and then two others since then, White Peak Station, and then Tony and Michelle Roberts from down in Southland. And in addition to that, we've had a number of people end up as regional supreme winners to compete for that as well. So as a small industry, we're really punching above our weight. So to me, that's a real reflection on how the industry prioritises, I guess, the environment alongside everything else that it does.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, the NZDFA invests heavily in events such as the Big Tick Day Out, Young Deer Farmers of the Year, and the Next Generation programs. Why are these initiatives so important for the future of the industry?
So I guess they touch on two main topics. One would be information transfer, and the other would be succession. So Big Tick Day Out and other initiatives like that, that's effectively trying to provide information out of research that's been done, or new ideas or information. It's also a blend of learning from farmers, for a need that is there. So obviously ticks are a sort of growing problem, which as climate changes, that they're sort of moving, well, they're pretty much right throughout the North Island and in the top of the South Island. So it's an issue that is spreading. And there's a lot of people that have been dealing with them, like the guys up in Kuiper have had that for a long time. So they've got a lot of knowledge around that. And then there's some real experts in these fields. And it's just bringing all those people together into one spot and providing the opportunity for people to learn. So that's what those sort of days are about. And then the next generation, well, that's something we've been doing for 14 years now. And that's all around succession of our industry. So it's trying to expose young people generally, or new people to the industry, and it's a twofold event. One is to expose them to all the different aspects of the industry, or as many as we can cram into 2 days. So it's a really short, sharp, high impact type environment. And two is to make connections so that they can know others in the industry, or feel like they can go and talk to people. And that's sort of one of the benefits of our industry, is that we are a close-knit, relatively small and nimble industry, and we're very open and sharing and very passionate. And I guess the ultimate form of flattery would be Beef and Lamb has then taken and run with it and does a next generation type program too. So there must be a little bit of merit in it when people start copying what you do.
Don't tell Beef and Lamb that.
I'm sure they won't listen.
And of course, you know, beyond those events, the organisation has a long history of bringing farmers together through branches, events, and competitions. Increasingly, there's also a focus on helping farmers learn from one another and adopt new ideas. How do you see NZDFA's extension role developing in the years ahead?
Yeah, look, I think that's going to be a renewed focus for us going forward, and a deserved one at that, I guess. In the early days, the branch network was the main driver for all of that sort of stuff. And then industry took over and did a bit of P2P and then advanced parties, and both were a resounding success. And they were sort of mainly funded by central government. And as that's come to an end, the need for that extension, or all that farmer-to-farmer learning, or that thirst for information around different things, as they arise, like new things or even old things, because I mean the population changes, right? So while a lot of people might know how something works, there's still new people coming through that need to rehear it. And also, I know for myself anyway, when you hear something for the third time, there's still something that you're picking up that you missed the first two times. So that extension is definitely an area that needs more focus, and that's to achieve, I guess, better outcomes for producers. Like I say, that new or old information transfer, I guess there's an opportunity to streamline that a bit, to get the same information to all farmers so that it removes that ambiguity. It also, through our network, it's an opportunity to have it led from the ground up, so needs-based, because farmers are the ones that will identify where their shortcomings are or where they think they'd like to learn a bit more. And that then gets more sustainable outcomes around longevity of those ideas that are transferred. But, I mean, ultimately, we're all trying to, improve efficiency, reduce that gap between profitability and inflationary pressures, and, yeah, be sustainable and create a vibrant future going forward. So I guess it's about growing the industry as well. So the branch network's got that opportunity to help play a role in that.
And, you know, looking to the future, 5-10 years, what do you think are some of the biggest opportunities you see for the deer industry? Is it the development of technology for environmental purposes? Do you think stabilization of the velvet market or new markets for venison? What do you think are some of the biggest opportunities?
Look, I think probably the first one would be the repositioning of our products away from the traditional channels. So I don't think we want to continue to compete as a red meat, just as a red meat protein. I think we need to differentiate, have that backed up by science and research, and make claims. So I suppose niche marketing in a sense, but move away from it just being another red meat option. And the same with, I guess, velvet is have a more diverse outlets. So so new markets, so Vietnam coming on this year is another option. That's great. We need to keep working on other markets that potentially are available, as well as end users. And as an industry, we need to get better at holding on to our IP and then leveraging that for the benefit of the levy payers that have paid for it. I think probably we need to be smarter about introducing the next generation to the ideas of how deer can play a role in strengthening their business. And that probably stretches as well to the financial sector, who seem to think that we're a high-risk industry, whereby if you actually look at the data, of which we do have, 40-year period, dairy's got more volatility than deer. And it's quite a stable industry, so to speak, but it's not a well-understood industry. So we've probably got more work to do around that to then allow access to capital, as well as allow for those that are passionate. But at the same time, we need to create that passion or help drive that passion so that they can see a role for deer within their businesses going forward. Technology is always going to be something that that is exciting, and how that may be used, the mind boggles going forward. I mean, halter and cattle is pretty impressive. So whether that'll ever get to deer or whether something else will be developed. So I think deer farmers have probably always been early adopters of technology, that they've not been afraid. I mean, you look right through our history, we've never been afraid to adapt or manipulate something to try and achieve an end result for ourselves. And those early pioneers jumping out of helicopters and then shooting net guns and all sorts of things, that that'd be a great place to start as early adopters of technology. So just as an industry, we're right behind that sort of thing. And whether that be drones, who knows? Watch this space. But yeah, lots of gains to be made in that area too, I would suggest. So those are probably the three main ones.
If you could leave deer farmers with one key message today about the future of the industry, what would it be?
The future is in your hands. I'd encourage them to take any opportunity to educate the uneducated, share their ideas, which deer farmers are renowned for, or inspire the next generation.
Fantastic. Look, it's been great chatting with you, Evan. Thank you very much for your time.
Most welcome, Angus.
Evan Potter, Chair of the New Zealand Deer Farmers Association. And perhaps the strongest message from that conversation is that this remains an industry with choices. There are challenges. Deer numbers have declined. Competing land uses continue to put pressure on traditional farming country. And both venison and velvet need to keep finding ways to create more value rather than simply competing as commodities. But there are opportunities too. New markets, better use of science and research, technology, and stronger connections with the next generation could all play a part. And as Evan points out, deer farmers have a long history of adapting, experimenting, and adopting new ideas. His final message is probably the simplest one. The future is in your hands. For an industry that was effectively created by people willing to do things differently in the first place, that seems a pretty appropriate place to finish. Thank you for listening to the Weekly Hotwire, and we'll catch you next time.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.